So would you introduce yourselves, please?
My name is Hamilton Lighthouser.
I'm Walter Martin.
And you're in a band, I heard.
We are in a band called The Walkmen.
So I'll fill in a couple of blanks. You're celebrating 10 years of doing this. That's been heralded to a certain extent. There were a couple of bands before this. You dropped out of college to make it happen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things that's the way it's always written up is this a band? Is this a collective? Is this a project? Now, it's been 10 years, but people are still kind of trying to define.
I feel like we're a classic band. We're five guys that, we were friends first, and then we became a band. We all grew up in D.C., and we're still that band.
Well, you did start in D.C., but you were then defined as a New York band, but then there are members in Philadelphia, New Orleans. You are doing this all very, very differently than you ever did. You're doing it. You're kind of a national, international band at this point, right?
I mean, it's very much of a job, you know, and having a kid sort of focuses us on, you know, we don't have other jobs anymore, and it's how you make money, and it's kind of a strange balance to be actually needing to make money and doing, and only being able to write songs when you're really genuinely interested and really genuinely excited about it. So it's, you know, figuring out exactly how to balance that is, I think that's probably our biggest, like, I guess that's why we can do it. It's because we figured out how to keep ourselves somehow interested.
But that's a really interesting concept you just came up with, because when you do finally make a band your sole source of income, which takes, you know, 75% of the gestation of any band, when you finally get there and you're making money and it is your job, but if you had a job at a factory, you could go home every night to your kid and say, Hi, you know, daddy's home.
But then when you're not on tour, you're home, you're home with them all the time. So it's a, you know, it's just a different schedule. It's like one really
on or all off. It used to be like the band was that we had our jobs, and then on Friday night you play the show, and then you go out and party with your friends, and it was all a big celebration, and the show was fun, and not that it's not fun anymore, but it definitely is very different when it becomes the thing that you wake up Monday morning and work on.
The great thing about this band is you've gotten away with something that almost no band gets away with. Nobody's been able to define a sound for this band. Nobody's been able to genre-lize you. And maybe that's because, you know, from The Rat to Pussycats to Heaven, you know, you have kept who you are. Obviously, your vocals are a very, you know, definitive sound. There is a sound to the band.
Yeah, I think that's helped us, and that's also hurt us, you know, because it's sort of hard for people, it's hard for people to know what exactly we're doing. And
just like The Rat, you're going to be pretty disappointed when you hear the really quiet stuff.
So there was this tweet from Lollapalooza, from actually someone I know very well, who is a major music guy, and I want to share this with you because I captured it and I wanted to remember it. From Lollapalooza, it said, song number four, I think it was song number four, is The Rat. They're giving up their hit. What are they going to do now?
I mean, probably, I guess it's our biggest song, right? I mean, people seem to really like Angela's Surf City a lot. I guess it's not as, I think those two are up there as our two top hits, probably.
Depending on your definition of hit, right?
Yeah. They're not hits.
I'm talking about Walkman hits. I ain't talking about real hits, no.
I know. Because of the way that you're working these days, collecting songs and you know, how did it get cohesive? Because it became cohesive. I mean, I listened to it end to end. It's very, very, very cohesive.
It was very, I mean, it actually was a very, like, productive process, which is very unusual for us, where we worked and we got results and we wrote a lot of songs and we edited them, and things consistently went forward, and that's never happened for us before. I mean, we've done a lot of beating our head against the wall and things, and really like working hard and nothing comes of it.
That whenever that was, that writing session for Heaven, we really kicked ass. We wrote, you know, we went to the studio with like 30 songs or something. And it made it so we could really whittle away and end up with the album that we really were into.
Okay, so let's talk about the studio. Let's talk about that producer guy, Mr. Phil. This is not an easy, you know, you made a choice there. Did you know what you were getting into when you made that choice? I mean, I know you loved his sound, and I know you chose him because you loved things that he produced. But then you get out there in the middle of, you know, where, East Bum, whatever, and you're there with the Taskmaster, right?
Yeah, he did a fantastic job. He really did. Yeah, I mean, there was definitely, yeah, we'd never relinquished any control to anyone before. And with Phil, it was from the get-go. It was it was contractually stated how he was going to have a real say in it. So it was a little bit of an adjustment when he wanted to do things his way, and you know, you thought you'd done it your way and it was good enough, and he was not into it or something, you know.
When that moment happens, where you get to that place where the swords are out, and you debate whether to duel or I'm painting a weird picture. What was it really about?
Playing style, actually. That was what he changed the most.
He wanted us to be very, very precise with the drumming. I mean, with everything, with the timing, the rhythm, and a lot of it was rhythmic stuff and tuning stuff.
We thought so, but we were. I mean, he was right. It's hard. You can't argue because I mean, you know, we had a lot of tuning problems. Honestly, it was. It's like embarrassing to say, but that was one of our biggest things. And then just rhythm, playing on rhythm, was a real challenge. I mean, it got a little dark for a while.
Talk about Frank Sinatra. Tell me about the journey a little bit.
Well, I would have liked to do. I mean, I just read a biography of Frank while I was writing some of my stuff. While we were in the middle of writing all the songs. And I would have liked to do more. I mean, I listened to a lot of his music and I really loved the book and was very interested in him during the time we were writing this. And it would be fun to try to do more songs along the lines of stuff he was doing in like the 60s. And I wish it was a little bit of a bigger influence on this record. Some of the songs, I guess, maybe didn't make it that were more directly inspired by that kind of thinking. But maybe in the future we'll be able to work on stuff that'll be sound more directly inspired by him. I don't know if we will or not. I mean, he does big band jazz, and we don't. We do rock and roll, so it's very different. But he's just got a great voice and a great presence and really good style, actually. And
when you play a festival like this, do you miss the days when it was smaller, when it was more intimate?
And we're going to, you know, like we're going to Tel Aviv in a couple of days. We've never been there before. I'm sure it'll be a small, very intimate show. So we definitely get our tastes of intimacy.
We get our fill of small. I mean, we do well in San Francisco, which is nice. We do well in a lot of big cities. And we do better in Europe now, actually. But we still have a lot of places where nobody gives a toss about it. And, you know, yeah, it can be, you know, we can do some small time stuff, yeah.
I invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs is the bread, and then a pile of songs by other artists in between that we just riff.